Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
In a way, I feel like I haven't really told my AT Appalachian Trail story. For me, it represents a pretty significant part of my life in terms of just like a lot. There's kind of like before the AT and after the AT. So, I don't know. I think I'm still, it was such a big thing that I think it's still processing. And probably because it's not just the trail and the adventure itself, but so much of kind of like the events leading up to it and then all the places it's taken me since, or like, to, you know, maybe like other paths that have come from it. So it was just kind of like this catalyst, like for a lot of change.
Women's running, running, running. Women's running stories.
Hi, my name's Liz Durstein. I am a runner, hiker, writer, musician.
Yes, in this episode, you're going to hear from Liz Durstein about her experiences on the Appalachian Trail. But before we hear more from Liz, I want to welcome you to Women's Running Stories. We are the podcast that features runners' stories as told by the runners themselves. My name is Sheree Louise Turner. I am your host and producer. And if you're new here, welcome and thank you for joining us. I really hope you enjoy this story. It is a great one. And if you are returning, welcome back. I'm so happy that you've returned. And I want to let you know that this podcast is a proud member of the Evergreen Network of Podcasts. Another podcast in the network that I know you will love is called Hear Her Sports. It is hosted and produced by my friend and great interviewer, Elizabeth Emery. Every other Thursday, Elizabeth delivers engaging, informative conversations with women who are bettering the sports world for us all. She has a wide variety of guests. She features a lot of athletes from so many different sports: open water swimming, cross-country skiing, cycling, running. I mean, the list goes on. And she brings in women who work in the sports space: journalists, academics, clothing manufacturers, nutritionists. Again, just a really wide variety of people. But the one thing all of these episodes have in common is that Elizabeth brings you into the world of the person she's talking to. And she and her guests really get into the reasons why her guest is so passionate about their pursuits, as well as the details of what it takes to do what they do so well. For me, I always find useful takeaways that I can apply to my own athletic pursuits, as well as life in general. So yeah, go ahead and check out Hear Her Sports. Of course, I will provide all of the pertinent links to Hear Her Sports in the show notes. Now on to Liz's story. We're focusing on Liz's experience around the Appalachian Trail, also known as the AT. We recorded this story back in the fall of 2022 in Boston, where Liz currently resides. Previous to her AT adventures, she was living in Portland, Oregon. Liz hiked the AT starting on July 7th, 2020, so she's had some time to reflect on her experiences, and she's going to get into a lot of that in this story. A few things to know about the AT. The specific distance of the trail changes ever so slightly from year to year, just depending on how it is routed. The year that Liz did it, it measured 2,193 miles. The one thing that doesn't change about the AT is that one end is at Springer Mountain in Georgia, and the other end is at Katahdin in Maine. A couple things mentioned in the story that I want to explain up front. Liz mentions FKTs, or fastest known times. These are records that are kept about the fastest known times that people have taken to complete well-known trails, and often they're quite long. And of course, the AT is one of them. There are FKTs kept in a number of different categories. There are northbound and southbound records. There are men's and women's records. And there are records for people who are supported or unsupported. Supported simply means that you have a crew, somebody, or many people who help you along the way. Unsupported, in essence, means that you're going solo. In Liz's case, she hiked northbound, starting in Georgia and ending in Maine, and she was supported. Another little detail to know about this trail culture is that many hikers take on a trail name. In some cases, that name is given to them by someone else, and in other cases, they choose their own name, as is what happened with Liz.
My trail name is Mercury. I chose it, and it was inspired by music, which ties in, just being a musician. But there's a song by this composer, Gustav Holst, called Mercury, and it's part of this orchestral suite called The Planets. I kind of knew of The Planets, but it was actually specifically before a prep hike that I was about to go do on the Appalachian Trail that my support crew, he was going to support me on this prep hike too. And he had this like minivan as the support vehicle with the CD player. So I was like, oh, I should get some music for this. So I went to the local like record CD store in Portland and was just kind of perusing old CDs and found The Planets and thought, oh, that sounds cool. Then I popped it in the CD player in my car and just immediately fell in love with the song Mercury. It's just like a very sprightly, upbeat sounding song. I was like, oh, this is how I feel when I'm on the trails. So like the music initially was like, oh, this is so cool, Mercury, I like that name. And then like the more I just kind of, you know, Googled and dove into it, like Mercury, it's also the name of the Roman deity, the wing-footed messenger. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, I like the sound of being a messenger. And then also Mercury, the planet, is the closest planet to the sun, and it's the smallest and fastest. You know, I think it takes something like 88 days to go around the sun. So I thought that was also cool. I was like, well, I'm trying to hike fast and Mercury is fast. So I just kind of found all these little neat connections. So it seemed pretty fitting.
Someone else who's important to know about before we get going here is Liz's support crew.
My support crew, it was a one-person support crew. For the most part, I had other people, but like come in and out. But I was Warren Doyle, a trail name Jupiter. And he doesn't actually have a trail name. That was like in general, but that was his trail name for the purpose of my hike. We were Mercury and Jupiter on the hike.
Now let's get to it. Let's get on to Liz Durstine's Appalachian Trail story, which has its roots many years back in her childhood.
I learned about the trail as a kid, like on a camping trip. Like it was like a youth expedition. Like, you know, like you have like maybe 8 kids and 2 counselors and go off and hike in the woods for a few days. And I like really fell in love with that and did it a couple more summers after that. Like my parents like sent me off to this neat expedition camp thing. And I really enjoyed just being out there on the trails. Like I would come back from these trips and just, you know, my parents would pick me up and I'd be in the back seat, basically like not like yelling at them, but I would remember like, oh my, wow, I'm talking really loud. I think I'm just really excited, but like telling them about all my experiences out, you know, on the trail. And so, I mean, it was something that, at least like the being outdoors, walking all day, kind of like having that sense of accomplishment from getting from point A to point B. And also I remember it was kind of like the first realization, like, oh, I don't need as many things as I thought I did. Like I, you know, we slept either in our little tents or on the little lean-tos on the trail. And I remember after like one particular trip, that I did in West Virginia. You know, my parents came and picked me up, and then we went and stayed at a family friend's house in Virginia. And I don't know, I just remember thinking, like, I don't need a bed. I don't need this room. like, this is silly.
These early experiences planted a spark of interest. It was one that Liz felt compelled to return to several years later.
Pre-AT, I lived in Portland. I moved there in 2009 and lived there all the way up until this past summer, 2022. I did a bunch of different things, like from the time that I started living there to when I left. But a big chunk of that, maybe from around 2013 to 2017, I was a touring musician. I played keyboard and sang in a pop band. It was with my ex-husband and some of our friends. And it was like a really fun time and just like a really cool way to kind of, I don't know, get this glimpse of or be part of the music industry. And we went on several headlining tours and played in all these cool places around the world. And then at the same time, I was like, oh, well, you know, I write my own music. Like, I'm interested in pursuing this. And so I wrote and recorded music of my own too, and put that out there under the moniker Pink Feathers. So I kind of had my own little like music creative project going on too. And then in 2017, I also got a little more involved in the running community in Portland. So I got initially involved, or, you know, became kind of part of the Portland running community. I mean, as soon as I moved there, I started working at Portland Running Company and had a lot of fun with that and made a lot of friends through doing that. And then, yeah, in 2017, some of my close friends and I started this track club called Rose City Track Club. And yeah, just kind of like built this little community, and it grew, and it's still around today. And then I also started coaching track and field and cross country at a local high school, Mountainside High School out in Beaverton. So like most of my, like kind of like from like, yeah, 2017 to basically like up to the pandemic, like that's what kind of what I was involved in. We weren't doing as much touring. So I was kind of, I mean, the touring stopped in 2017. And as far as my personal music, like I loved being part of a group and like playing support, but I think it's another thing to kind of carry your own act. And I just don't think it fit my personality. Like, I'm a little more introverted. Like, so I just kind of set that aside and started to kind of turn my focus more toward running and the track club. And I had this big goal of qualifying for the Olympic trials. So that's kind of there was this kind of big build to that. And I ran the Houston Marathon in 2020. And so at Houston, I ended up running a 2-hour, 51-and-change-minute marathon. And that was at the time, a 6-minute PR. So like, even though I didn't get the trials goal, I mean, I ran the best marathon of my life. I was also at that point like thinking about or like planning to hike the AT, and I just kind of had it in my mind like, okay, I'll give it everything I have to qualify for the US Olympic marathon trials. It's something I had been honestly chasing for like 12 years, like 3 Olympic cycles, even though, you know, I never really had any kind of indication in my, you know, race times or fitness that was a viable thing. But I really thought I could do it. And I don't know. So I just kind of fixated on this goal for like basically all of my adult life to that point. And it kind of felt like I was banging my head against a wall a little bit, like really wanting this thing so badly, and it was like a goal that wasn't really serving me anymore. So and it's kind of funny because like I had this whole timeline already planned out from like 2015 or 2016. I was like, okay, in 2020, I'm going to hike the Appalachian Trail. And, you know, not really knowing how I'd be feeling about my Olympic trials goal at that point, and not really knowing what else would be going on in my life, or not thinking why it might be like significant, or like, I don't know. It was just this idea I had, but I was very committed to the idea like for a very long time before I even started. I think there was something, I don't know what it is, but like something very deep inside that like called me to the trail to begin with. And I think that goes back to like from a young age, and I don't know what it is. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's something that like drew me toward wanting to do that, like to have that kind of experience. And it would probably still be true of like why I go in any hike now. I think it's mainly just curiosity, like what's going to happen? What will I learn? What will I see out there? I'm like interested in exploring my own capacity and my own limits, or yeah, like, and I guess that just goes back to curiosity, but like, how far can I hike in a day? What can I do? And then I think maybe just like me being the way I am, these very enticing goals. And like, when I say me being the way I am, like very type A goal oriented kind of person. Originally, yeah, my plan was, I think it was just, I'm going to hike the AT. I really didn't have a plan of how I would do it. I mean, it was a very just kind of like daunting foreign thing to think about, because I really, aside from those like this maybe three expeditions I went on like three consecutive summers as like a, I guess I was like a young teenager. I didn't really have much outdoor experience otherwise. I never did anything like that as an adult. And I just thought, I was just like, this is this cool adventurous thing I am going to do. I'll work out the details later. Like, so yeah, back then it was just, I want to do this. And I shared my plans with some friends, and, you know, they're like, oh, that's so cool. Like, can I come with you? And I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, let's plan a trip together. And, you know, it's still like 4 or 5 years away, but you know, it's like, so it was just kind of just more of an abstract idea. I really didn't have a plan. It just sounded fun. And then the closer it got, I guess I should also say, back then I was aware of trail records, and I had read about Jennifer Farr Davis and her supported overall record. I had read about Heather Anderson and her self-supported Pacific Crest Trail and Appalachian Trail. And I didn't necessarily see myself doing those things, but you know, going back to the like the running and Olympic trials, I was like, well, like I'm a runner. I wonder if anyone's ever like run the Appalachian Trail. I wonder if like maybe that's something I could try doing. And I wasn't thinking of it back then in terms of trying for a record, but I was just like, oh, maybe I can, you know, meld these two things together. Maybe I can bring my running into this hike somehow. So I just started kind of toying around with that idea. And then I didn't really start actually planning anything until 2019, the summer before, and was like, oh, I guess, okay, I have one summer before next summer, so I guess I should actually start to experiment with gear and how this is going to work, and if I'm going to run, how am I going to carry my stuff and also run? Like, how's that going to work?
Like so many people before her, Liz's questions about how to approach the Appalachian Trail led her directly to Warren Doyle, the man who would become Jupiter to Liz's Mercury.
I met Warren because I attended his Appalachian Trail Institute. It's like a 5-day workshop that he hosts at his homestead. he has this neat farm property in Tennessee, and it's like a retreat center. And it's the folk school. He calls it the Appalachian Folk School. And he's an educator. He's a retired professor, university professor. And also he's hiked the Appalachian Trail 18 times. I know. 9 of them were through hikes, so hiking end to end in one go. And 9 of them were section hikes. So he'd do different sections of the hike and log them and eventually piece it all together to be an entire hike. So he's done that 9 times as well. And he's mentored other AT record attempters and record setters. Like I know he helps out the overall record holder Carl Sabe with like some logistical stuff. He mentored Jennifer Farr Davis. And you can sign up for these 5-day workshops. They're about like the psychological preparation for the AT, because if you read up on the statistics, I think something like 20% of the people that start the AT with the intention of hiking the entire thing finish. So there's a 20% completion rate. So we had to fill out this questionnaire before the workshop, and I was definitely, I had been kind of, at that point, the idea of trying for a record was floating around in my head, but I also didn't want to be, obnoxious about it. I think there was a little section that was, it just asked, how long do you think it'll take you to complete the trail, or how long do you want to complete the trail in? And I was like, well, I know I had been looking at the fastest known time boards. And I think basically there were 3 women on the board. It's Jennifer Farr Davis and then Heather Anderson, who did it self-supported. Oh, and Jennifer's time, she did it in a little over 46 days. Heather Anderson did it self-supported, so like backpacking style, no support crew. She did it in 54 days. And then there's another, I know. It's like not that much of a difference from the overall record. It's really amazing. And then Liz, trail name Snorkel Thomas, she had done the hike self-supported, but she did it in 80 days. So I was like, okay, I don't know, maybe I can try to do it in 80 days. I wasn't even at that point trying to think of touching Jennifer Farr Davis's or Heather Anderson's records, but I was like, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe I can do it in 80 days. So I think on the little questionnaire, I put 100 days. I was like, well, I'll just round up. So it's like more modest of a goal, or I don't know. But he told me later, he saw what I had written. And then he also, I think, just looked me up on Facebook or something and saw that I was a runner. And he just kind of put 2 and 2 together pretty quickly. Like, oh yeah, I bet she's going to try to hike the trail pretty fast. And then I had also emailed him before the workshop, knowing that we'd be going on these hikes every day, but they were planned, I think, to be 6 or 8 miles. And I was like, hey, would there be options for going longer? If we want to go longer, I'm going to be running. I want to experiment with running with my pack, because at that point I was planning self-supported. And so I think maybe I did a couple 13 mile days in a row. And the first 2 times I took my full pack with me and all the weight and tried, it just was experimenting with running on the AT, and it was really fun. And every day, Warren said, hey, you can just leave your pack in the trunk. You don't need to take your pack. And I was like, well, no, I want to like practice with my pack. Like that's, that's like why I'm here. And then the last day, I think there were 3 days of hiking. On the last day, he offered one more time and I said, okay. And so I left my pack in the car and then just ended up having one of those like runner's high kind of runs. It was like a Mercury kind of run where you hear like the sprightly music playing in the background. But it was just like one of those kind of like a spiritual high moment. Like I was just running through the woods and I think even like a little rainstorm came through, but I just felt like happy and free. And I remember writing in my little journal, like I felt like a kid in a playground, like I just felt amazing. And I don't know. So I just had like all these good feels from that run. And I remembered also telling Warren how excited I felt. And so I don't know. I think it was just like he maybe just saw some of that like passion and excitement come through for me. And he also just loves AT records. Like he follows whenever they happen, like he always follows along and he's always very like, you know, willing to help anyone that'll ask. And I think it's just something that he is also very like passionate about. So, you know, here's this person that's like a runner and excited about doing the trail and maybe hiking it really fast. So anyway, we kept in touch after that. And he said like, hey, like if you end up wanting to try for a supported record, like I would support you, like if you want. Yeah. So that's kind of how that all came about. And so in addition to the, like the workshops that he puts on, he also does these kind of like supported section hikes for, so similar to what we were doing at the workshop, but on various parts of the AT. So he said, hey, I have this, he calls them smart hikes. I have a smart hike happening in New York. Like, why don't you come to New York? And then you can try some like long, long days on the AT. It was a short trip. So it was 2.5 days. I took a red eye and he picked me up at the airport. I think we stopped by a Walmart so I could just, you know, get whatever supplies, food or whatever. And then he dropped me off at, you know, some part of the trail around noon. And I just ran until maybe 7 o'clock until 7 o'clock or whenever before it got dark out and did about 20 miles. And then the day after that, I did 40 miles, and that was my first time doing anything that far ever. And and again, it was kind of the same, yeah, not to be corny, but like magical feeling, kind of like, again, like that high of like just skipping around in the woods all day. Like that's what it felt like. It never felt like hard work. It just felt really fun. And it was just this kind of cool discovery, like, oh my gosh, like I had no idea I could do this and feel really good doing it. And so it was neat to have this theoretical thing that I was interested in doing, but then actually trying it and being like, oh my gosh, I can do this. So, and then the next day after that, I did another 40 miles and it was the same thing. It was just kind of this very positive experience. And I loved the freedom of movement, the freedom of being out there and then just seeing all these beautiful sights. It was just this kind of feeling of I found my thing.
Liz was in. She put in some final big training efforts and set her sights on starting her hike on July 7th, embarking on a plan she and Warren set up, and it had some very ambitious goals.
The goal was to break the overall supported record by Carl Sabe, awesome Belgian runner athlete. And we had like a very meticulous plan for like how I would do that. And, you know, as anyone that has done multi-day adventures or even ultras or even, you know, marathons, whatever, it's like, you know, you can have a really perfect plan, but there's that quote, like everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Like, but yeah, that was the A goal. And we kind of had this, like all my start stop points mapped out. And I started with a big first day and a big second day, all kind of with the goal of getting to the southern end of the Smokies at a very specific time, because there are these long 30-mile stretches without support in the Smokies. So it was all just kind of like strategic. And I also still had pretty limited camping and hiking experience. So everything was planned to end at a road crossing. Like, I did bring some of my hiking and camping gear with me as an option, but I ended up never being brave enough to use it. And also it just would have been like one more thing to do on top of already being exhausted. So
Liz was focused on Carl Sabe's record, which stood at 41 days, 7 hours. That is an average of 53 miles a day. She also had a plan B, which was Jennifer Farr Davis's supported women's record of 46 days, 11 hours. This would still require that Liz complete, on average, 47 miles every single day. It would become clear early on that Liz wouldn't be able to break Sabe's record, so the benchmark that Farr Davis had set became the goal to aim for.
Most days started very early in the morning. My kind of go-to time, like on a standard day, would be 4 a.m., as in like on the trail by 4 a.m., so probably waking up at 3:15 or so. And I slept in the support vehicle. I had like a little platform, like a raised platform in the back that I slept on. And Jupiter slept. He slept under a tarp outside every night. Just very kind of him. And yeah, I'd try to be on the trail by 4 a.m. And of course, that varied greatly throughout, just depending on the goals for the day or the weather or the terrain. So from very early on, like right away, I wasn't getting much sleep, even in the first few days. And I don't know if I ever got used to it, but it's not like I felt sleepy the entire day all the time. It would usually be the hardest kind of in the first half of the day, but then it would just kind of come and go in phases, or sometimes I'd have a lot of energy. Other times I'd, you know, be slapping my face like on the trail, like trying to stay awake. So the first week or so, I was very alone when I was out there on the trail. A, it was a pandemic year, and B, like I just, like because of that, not only were there not many people on the trail, but I also couldn't just like invite my friends to come fly out from Oregon and hike with me. Like I had driven cross country to get there. So it was very solitary for the beginning of the trip and the end as I got up into Maine. But through the middle sections, I actually had a lot of people that had heard about what I was doing. So I'd have like people come out and walk with me for stretches, like especially down in Virginia and kind of like all the way up through Connecticut. I, you know, during the day might have some people join me, and then even some kind people join me for night sections, which I really appreciated. But yeah, I rarely took much of a break. I mean, I might stop to grab a sandwich that Warren had brought for me. I might need to change my shoes. You know, he'd meet me at road crossings throughout the day. Sometimes I'd only go a few miles without having support. Sometimes I'd go up to 30 miles without support, just depending on where we are on the trail. but it's like, it's just kind of go, go, go all day. And I would, because I wasn't able to, I didn't, you know, for being a runner going into this, I'm going to run. You know, I didn't run pretty much the entire time. I wasn't able to because of like injuries that cropped up. I mean, I walked most of it, which ended up because I wanted to, you know, I still had these goals that I didn't want to let go of. So I just walked. I'd usually cut myself off at midnight, just mentally. I didn't want to go past midnight. So yeah, 4 to 12 was kind of like my standard.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
But there, yeah, there was kind of like a crossroads, a figurative crossroads in Virginia in Shenandoah National Park, where I forget exactly my ailments. I know shin splints had been kind of bothering me throughout. I think that was the worst thing at the time. I also had really bad blisters that were the first thing in the morning. It would take a few miles for my blisters to warm up, so I'd just be like whimpering and whining, you know, like by myself down the trail, like just hoping my blisters would eventually warm up. And then I'd end the day crying because my shins hurt so bad. And so it was starting to feel like a losing battle. And I had stayed on pace, I guess, with Jen's record, I think through whatever day, like day 18 or 19, I had averaged, I think, 49 miles a day, and, you know, with these ailments and such. And, you know, she dealt with all kinds of stuff too, so it wasn't just me. But I think I kept hoping it would get better or something would turn around, or like I'd magically I'd eventually heal and be able to run again. But it was becoming very clear that that wasn't going to happen, and that I finally just kind of, I don't want to say gave up, but I kind of like, yeah, I had kind of reached my limit. I'd had enough. And I think I just, it was toward the end of a day, maybe 6 or 7 o'clock. So I could have kept hiking on a quote unquote normal day that, you know, I still had probably another at like 6 hours of hiking to do. But I just kind of looked at Jupiter and was like, I don't know if I said, I don't think I can do it. I forget what I said, but I did know that I was done for the day. And I did know that the record was no longer, the record wasn't happening. And that was like my whole thing. Like, yeah. So I ended the day early, and essentially because of that, let go of Jen's record. Cause yeah, to give myself any chance, I should have kept walking. And I took a quote-unquote rest day the next day. I think I started that day by hiking 12 miles just to do something, or like just to, I think like it was like, let's just, maybe it was, let's just finish Shenandoah National Park. And I got some like Burger King and just kind of was like, what am I going to do next? And then, yeah, Jupiter came up with, he came up with several alternative plans for me. And it was basically like, here's when you would finish if you keep going at 30 miles a day. Here's when you would finish if you keep doing 20 miles a day. And just kind of like, and I think the whole idea was like, yeah, he wouldn't be able to keep supporting me, or maybe he would up until the planned 47 days or whatever we gave ourselves as like a maximum. But like, but then after that, it's like, I had my backpacking stuff, I'm on my own. And I was like, I don't want to finish in September. I also didn't want to stop. Like, I still wanted to keep going. So it's like, well, like, why do I want to keep going? And so I don't know. I think it just, there was definitely something deeper there. I don't know if I can totally name what it was, but I don't know. I think it was not like a magical, blissful experience in its entirety, but I certainly found this, you know, like inner toughness that I didn't know I had. So we came up with a new plan to try for under 50 days, because like that would still be just like a really big personal, big deal. Like, and it helped motivate me, I guess, to want to keep going. And also, yeah, I don't know. I just, the thought of stopping just seemed really sad. And the thought of not reaching Katahdin, which is the, where the northern terminus of the trail is, like that also just seemed like, you know, I had envisioned myself for so long, like touching that sign, reaching the mountaintop, and just to like let it all go because I wasn't going to get a record, like that seemed sad. So yeah, so that was when I decided, and we decided to keep going. And it didn't get easier after that either.
Liz recommitted to completing the AT, and this meant she would continue to face the physical challenges of long hiking days over difficult terrain, battling injuries. And there was the reality of facing the ever-present dangers and uncertainties of wild places.
Fear is probably my favorite topic or like thing to think about, because it informs so much of what we do, like in our lives on a daily basis, how we plan, how we, so I have fears going into every hike, and it's kind of like the usual suspects, like storms, bears, people. But I think at least for me, I tend to stew in my fears, and it can be paralyzing, like before you even get out there. And I'm just saying out there as a metaphor for anything. Like it can stop you from doing anything before you start because of like what could happen. And yeah, I mean, I think that's just like a very human thing. So I was really nervous about storms, like even from when I first started reading about the AT and learning about it. It's like, well, you're up on ridges basically the whole time. So what do you do? And even during some of my practice hikes, like there was a storm and I ended up just hiding in the support vehicle because I didn't want to go out in the storm. And I remember, yeah, Jupiter was like, if you want to go for a record, you can't just like hide in the support vehicle because there's storms every day, like at least in the South in the summer, like for sure. And yeah, the first storm I encountered on the AT, I think it was just a day or like 2 days in. And I remember hiking, going up a mountain while there's a storm rolling through. And I had never planned on bringing a hiking pole. Like I never used those trail running, but I had, you know, only 2 days in started to get shin splints. So Jupiter gave me a hiking pole. And I remember thinking, great, like now I'm going to get electrocuted because I'm holding this hiking pole. So every time like the thunder cracked, I'd like throw my hiking pole down the trail as if like, you know, I was faster than lightning. And the storms became a very regular occurrence. And I don't think there's ever a storm that's not going to be scary. And there's never going to be a good time to like be on a mountain. Like you're, I mean, it is risky, but I had so many other things on my mind and they became so regular that I just didn't care anymore. And I definitely like, you know, would yell at the thunder or like, I'm like, oh yeah, is that all you got? Or like, you don't scare me. I like, and there were definitely times that I'd sing just to, you know, I'd be scared, but I'd sing just to make myself feel better. Like the I Have Confidence song from Sound of Music. And I'm like, I have confidence. And you know, I'm like crying, but like saying I have confidence.
And it wasn't just being in the storm that could cause Liz to go into states of singing and crying at the same time. The aftermath of storms brought their own type of hurdles.
I hiked through a tropical storm in New Jersey. That was, I actually was just laughing because it was so ridiculous. I had just crossed into New Jersey from Pennsylvania. And, you know, I think, you know, I wasn't paying attention to, you know, I wasn't really on my phone a lot. Like I wasn't paying attention to the weather. Like Jupiter knew it was coming, but I think he didn't want to worry me with like what was ahead. And I think he just maybe mentioned it like the day before or the day of, like, yeah, just so you know, there's a tropical storm coming. And I got really lucky because it rained really, really, really hard on me. Like I was hiking and the trail was just a river. It was like probably 3 to 4 inches of water. I was wearing every layer I had, plus like Jupiter had lent me his big old jacket. I was trying to think of them. It was like made of a very thick, like not water resistant material, but it was more about keeping warm than staying dry. I was also wearing a garbage bag underneath everything just to like keep my core warm. And it was just, I mean, I was smiling the whole time because it was just so funny. Like it was, you know, of course no one's out there. And so I guess it was one of those like, okay, I'm feeling very alive kind of moments. And again, like I just got lucky. I heard one tree fall and it wasn't near where I was. But I keep saying I was lucky because then another obstacle that came up the several days after that was so many downed trees, yeah. Like an unbelievable amount of downed trees. And it was all really fresh. And you know, it had just happened. So the, you know, trail maintainers hadn't gotten a chance to come out there. And I still have kind of like PTSD from it. Cause like I was often looking down to make sure I wasn't tripping. Cause the AT has a lot of rocks and roots and I would smell a downed tree before I could see it because there was this specific smell of like the fresh bark. And I would just feel this sense of dread because I'm like, oh, and then I would start to see the fresh green leaves on the ground as I would start to approach. It's like, okay, I smell it. I see the leaves. Here's another downed tree. And during the day, it was just a nuisance. But then at night, it actually got really scary because you couldn't always see where the trail went because there were so many downed trees. I had my, you know, flashlight and headlamp, but I, you know, stayed very calm while everything was happening. But I looked down later and my hands were shaking. You know, the AT goes on all these like steep up and down mountains. So I'm hiking down kind of like a steep embankment down into a valley or a gap, as they say. And there's the trails just obliterated. So like, so yeah, that was a big obstacle. And pretty scary sometimes because I'm, you know, I'm just by myself and I don't know where to go. And then there was one time that I, you know, I did have someone that had accompanied, like that had come with me and hiked with me at night. And then we were together and we still got lost and like got off. So it was just, yeah, that was a challenge.
And then, of course, there's the wildlife.
I had my first bear encounter in the Smokies. It was just munching in the middle of the trail, munching on some berries. It heard me before I saw it and it snorted at me a couple times just to be like, hey, this is my space. So I was like, okay. And I tried yelling at it to get it to go away, but it did not care. So I ended up having to like kind of bushwhack around it. And then, yeah, I had another bear encounter later that I startled some bear cubs and made the mama bear really mad. And she actually like bluff charged me a few times on the trail. It was really scary. And it ended up being fine. And again, the mama bear stood her ground. The cubs were up in the tree. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm bushwhacking again. And yeah, so there was that. And then I saw many other bears on the trail, but not, they were usually running away, but it was always just kind of an awareness to have that they're out there. You know, it's like, yes, there was a lot of pain and suffering, but there were still like all these magical moments like sprinkled throughout. Like there were, every day. And I don't know, like just I have these memories of I had one night or day my parents had come to visit, and I could have finished a very like good on paper day at 8 o'clock, and I could have gone back to like the hotel with them and gotten a shower and I also was just like, I know I can keep going, and not because like I want to torture myself, but just I just knew I could. I kept going, and there actually was a storm coming again, but before that, like, I just remember the sun was setting, and then because of these dark clouds, it made for this really brilliant, like these orange rays of sun just kind of like peeking through the trees and then lighting up all these really pretty white flowers that were kind of like carpeted on the forest floor. And it was really beautiful, but it was just one of those, like a neat moment I wouldn't have experienced otherwise. And this other moment on the 50th day, I was like, I was really determined to like get to a certain spot that day, because then that meant I would be able to finish under 52 days or something, but it meant putting in a really long day. So I think I got up and started at 2 a.m. that day, and it was like a 2 a.m. to midnight kind of day. And it kind of culminated with hiking up this one last mountain, White Cap Mountain. And it was, I don't know what the feeling was. Like, I don't know, like self-empowerment, pride, like those don't really sum it up, I don't think, quite. but just reaching the top of this mountain, and, you know, the wind, it's at night, there's like fog and wind just kind of swirling around. I'm by myself. I have my trusty little hiking pole that I've had with like most of this journey, my flashlight. And it was just a really surreal moment. So I don't know. I think it's like maybe what I'm trying to tap into is that like you're just like pushing yourself to these extremes, but then you have these really extreme experiences that just wouldn't be the same without the struggle to get there.
Not long after that big day, Liz Durstein arrived at her final destination of Katahdin. She completed the Appalachian Trail in 51 days, 16 hours, and 30 minutes. She averaged 42 miles a day. With this, Durstein became the second fastest woman to hike the entire AT, and hers is one of the top 10 fastest AT hikes, man or woman, supported or unsupported, northbound or southbound, ever recorded. Her hike also set a new FKT Appalachian Trail record for women supported in the northbound direction. Farr Davis had gone southbound. The previous Northbound supported women's AT record of 106 days, 8 hours had been set back in 2015 by the mother-daughter team of Angela and Kelsey Sawyer. Beyond all that, however, for Liz, although this hiking adventure had come to an end, the impact of her AT journey has continued to reverberate through her life to this very day.
Well, now I'm here in Boston doing music. I mean, the AT definitely had played a big role in that. Like, I was doing this really extreme physical thing. And I also, because I didn't listen to my support crew, didn't put my phone in a little bag, and then it got wet in the storms and stopped working. And so I didn't have any form of like entertainment or the ability to call someone or the ability to put on music. So it really was just like in my head. And like kind of one cool thing to come out of that was music, like little melodies would form in my head and just kind of like go over and over and over. But it just kind of brought out this, it like tapped into this creative part of me that I didn't know was still there. And then I think also in doing this very extreme physical thing, I think I was just like, when I'm done with this, I am going to do creative pursuits. I am going to write. I am going to make music. I'm never going to walk again. I don't know, there's the combination of like the fatigue and the high emotions and then also just being a like artist, creative person, but it just kind of lit the fire in me to want to pursue those like just to more creative or yeah, like pursuits again after kind of leaving it for some time. Because I stopped touring, I wasn't really doing a ton with music, like between the end of that and the start of the AT. So today, I'm currently living in Boston. I'm in the midst of a 2-year music program at Longy School of Music. I'm studying piano, classical piano. So that I grew up studying classical piano. I studied it in school, but then kind of, you know, I took a hiatus to like play pop music for a long time, and none of this was planned. I'm not to go into details, but it is significant. Like I was married for 13 years and now I'm not. I lived in Portland, Oregon for 13 years and now I'm not. Not to say that I might not go back, but I think not only did I hike the AT and have this kind of wild experience, but like also it was the pandemic year and the right. Pandemic happened. So like I think there's a lot intertwined there too. I mean, everyone's lives were upended. So I'm sure that plays into a lot of it too. And it does kind of make you, you know, like, okay, like what are my priorities? Like what do I want in my life? What do I not want in my life? And I want everyone to like me. I want everyone in my life to like me. But then it's like, ooh, I start kind of going down this different path. And again, not that it's the AT itself, but like I'm starting to maybe do things that not everyone is gonna like. But I feel strongly enough about it to want to go and pursue that. And so it means I'm not going to be doing all the same things or necessarily like prioritizing all the same things I was before. And like, I'm not making everyone happy with my decisions. and that's really hard to do. So, but yeah, I mean, I think maybe what I found, not just on the trail, but in the process of the kind of like preparing for it and exploring all these new things, I think there were parts of my life where I was more trying to like fit in or blend in or just kind of that like look the part or be the part. And on the trail, and not to put it all on the trail, maybe the trail is like a metaphor, but like I felt maybe that was like the vehicle for like I found a place where I felt like I could really be myself and whatever that means.
And that brings us to the end of Liz Durstine's Appalachian Trail story. Albeit, of course, her story of adventuring did not end at the AT. Liz has gone on to complete several other multi-day hikes, and she has set several FKTs. This includes the self-supported record on the Long Trail in Vermont, which took just over 6 days, and most recently, this summer of 2023, she set the FKT self-supported women's record for the Via Alpina in Switzerland. It took her just under 7 days. Of course, I will link in the show notes to the many ways you can keep up with Liz Durstine. Specifically, I will link to how you can learn more about her AT adventure. And in the show notes, you will also find ways to keep up with women's running stories, as well as hear her sports. I want to thank Liz Durstine so much for sharing this really powerful and personal story, and also for sharing her music. More on that in just a second. Durstine's commitment to following her adventurous curiosity and pushing her limits demonstrates just what an impact these types of experiences can have on every aspect of your life. And now about the music that Liz allowed us to use. The piano music you heard was from a suite that was inspired by her trip on the AT. She recorded it in a voice memo with an electronic keyboard not long after she finished her Appalachian Trail adventure, and I am so thankful that we got to use it in this episode. Thank you, Liz. Additional music in this episode, a clip from Mercury by Gustav Holst, produced by Beta Records, and of course, we feature original music by Cormac O'Regan in every single episode. And that brings us to the end of this episode. I want to thank you so much for being here and for listening. I say it every single time because it's true. I love making these episodes, but the power in them is you listening. So, yeah, thank you. And until next time, this is Cherie coming to you from my closet, now in Cork, Ireland, and I wish you healthy, joyful strides forward. Women's Running. Running. Women's Running Stories.
There is no hood like parenthood. When you meet a fellow parent, you just kind of get each other on a whole nother level. Hi, I'm Kanika Chanda Gupta. I'm a former CNN journalist, mom of three, including twins, and host of That's Total Mom Sense, the podcast. I interview changemakers on their life lessons, legacy, and superpower of intuition, aka their mom sense and dad sense. I've had some pretty amazing parents on my show.
Hey, what's up? I'm Kelly Rowland.
Hi, this is Chelsea Clinton.
It's me, Bobby Brown. Can't wait to share my story.
Episodes release every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube. Join my tribe at thatstotalmomsense.com and follow me on Instagram at Kanika Chanda Gupta. I'm thrilled to be on this journey with you.